Okay, I have we have with us here Mr. Jack Gillen from the big city of Micanopy. And Jack is the current president of the Florida Cracker Cattle Association. He might talk about that in a minute. He's also holding office in the Cracker Horse Association.
Vice president
of the Florida Cracker Horse Association. And he'll be telling you what those animals mean. And he has here with him a cow dog. That's about the tamest cow dog I've ever seen. Usually you can't even get near one. Yeah, she. Okay, Jack, first of all, how about just telling us what cracker cattle and cracker horses are?
Well, to me, they are our heritage and history of Florida. They played a big part in Florida's development and history. And of course, they were brought here by the Spanish. They brought along a lot of things that are big in Florida now, like citrus. And of course, cattle. Florida is one of the main cattle producers in the United States still. And Florida was the first place that cattle and horses were introduced in the United States.
When was that?
1524, I think, is the earliest record we could find. These dogs probably came along with them, too. I don't know. We don't know the history of the dog. They may have been Native American dogs, for all we know, but the black mouth cur and the Catahoula leopard cur dogs go back, you know. They didn't keep records on their dogs like they did on their horses and cattle. Spanish were famous for keeping records, and they kept better records on their horses than they did marriages and things like that. They were real meticulous about bloodlines of horses and so forth. Of course, they developed the Pasofino and the Peruvian pacer horses, and some of the islands have very similar horses, South America and Mexico, very similar horses to the Florida cracker horses. But the cracker horses of Florida were not bred carefully like the Pasofino, bred for that walk and everything, so they developed into a different horse, a little bit different. Most of them still have a fast walk and it's been referred to as a coon rack. Cover the ground like a raccoon getting in a hurry. They go sideways and all kind of ways, but it's real smooth, and that's what they're famous for. Real, a lot of, what am I trying to say? Endurance. Yeah, they're tough little horses. Go and go and go. And that's why the cattlemen liked them. They could ride the same horse for forever, you know. I've been to places where people were riding cracker horses, and they'd ride the same horse all week, and some fellas brought quarter horses or something else, thoroughbred cross or whatever, Appaloosa, and they'd change horses at lunchtime every day. And several horses. But they're important to me, I guess, because of my history and background. And if you ever read the book Land Remembered, you know what I'm talking about. If you're old Florida, it could have been any family that's been in Florida for that period of time. The history was the same. And the history in that book's very, very accurate. It's a fictional characters, but the history's real accurate. It's a real good book if you haven't read it. It's by Patrick Smith. But I guess that's why they're important to me. I love the animals, but it's also history, my family history and so forth. We came to Florida, or my dad's family came to Florida before the Indian Wars, 1820-something. Don't know exactly, but came down from the Carolinas and Georgia and in an ox cart with a cracker cow pulling it. So, in fact, my great-grandfather was a logger in this area right here in Columbia County. Logged a lot of virgin timber out of Osceola Forest, and they used cracker oxen to snake those logs out of the woods. They had these huge wheel things. I don't even remember what they're called, but they would balance a huge log on there, team ox, and snake them out of the woods with them. And they weren't big in cattle. They were more in timber and turpentine. Turpentine was a big thing in Florida then. They used a lot of turpentine and to treat ropes and stuff on ships. Back before they had motors in them, they were sailing ships. And turpentine was a big thing back then. But they had cattle, not a lot, because this land around here just didn't support cattle like further south. And they didn't call them cracker cattle, of course. That term, I don't know, at that point in time, it might have been a derogatory term. It is and was. It has changed meanings over the years. Now it's synonymous with the pioneer or early settler. But they called them woods cows, basically, because they were in the woods. But they used this type of dog to gather the cattle out of the woods, and that's about the only way. And, of course, the only horses in Florida at that time were the Spanish. They called them a variety of things. Some of them called them scrub ponies, and I've heard them called marsh tackies. I don't know where that term came from, but there were a lot of them on the marshes in Florida. I can remember, even when I was a kid, there were wild horses on Payne's Prairie and the marshes up around Fernandina, places like that, Cumberland Island. They were marsh tackies, I guess.
Can you talk a little bit about the... I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the relationship of the dog and the horse, and how the dog will actually, you know, identify with the horse, and even won't let people near the horse. I don't want to give too much of it away, but
yeah, it is an interesting bond. You wouldn't think that a horse and a dog would get along, but dog being kind of like a predator, and a horse is a prey animal. But they do. They bond, and in fact, if I'd have brought a horse up here, I wouldn't have had to have this leash. She loves to be with that horse, or any horse that's with me. It's funny. If I'm on a horse, it doesn't matter what horse it is, and I ride, you know, five or six different horses, and she'll go with that horse. And if I leave that horse at a cow pen somewhere, like I loaded up a load of calves in a trailer or something, and leave the horse tied up in the cow pen, she'll stay there for as long as that horse is there. And I've left her for a couple of days at a cow pen, and she'll be right there when I get back. Of course, leave her some water and something to eat. If I didn't, she might eat the horse. But she's funny. You can load a horse in the trailer, and she'll climb in that trailer over the side or whatever. If you take the horse out and leave her in the trailer, she'll climb out of the trailer. She's going to be with that horse, and usually right up under the horse. And the horse doesn't bother her. And I think the horse likes her being there as much as she likes being with the horse. I can't explain why that is, but that's just the way they are. And I've got, you know, some more of these dogs, and they're the same way. They all want to be with that horse. And it's always the horse I'm riding. It's a funny thing. And it doesn't matter which one of the horses it is. And I can take some kids or other people with me, penning cows or whatever. She'll be right there by my horse until I send her the cows. So it's a bond, and I don't know if it's a three-way bond, me and the dog and the horse, or what it is, but she's always right there. And that's where she wants to be. Now, if I load up, just hook up to the trailer and leave the house, no horse, she don't care where I'm going. But if that horse is on there, you better chain her up if you don't want her to go. She'll be on the running board of that trailer going down the highway. She's going. It's funny. They're funny dogs. They're real loyal, and they want to please you. They're would have made a good wife, probably.
Well, you've talked about you know, the history of the dog and the horse and the bond between the dog and the horse. And people talked about this yesterday, but we've got some new folks in the audience here. And so tell us about what the cow dog does. I mean, it's not like a sheep dog herding sheep. If you could tell us about how the dogs work with cattle.
Most all people that work cattle with these kind of dogs send them with voice command or whistle. Send them in, call them back by voice. If I tell her to go ahead, she gets in front of the cows and stops them. You can have a herd of cows getting away from you and send those dogs, just say, go ahead, go ahead. They'll hit them off, then they circle them, ring them, as some people say, just start circling them. And it's instinct. I think it's a predator thing, basically. And they'll bunch that bunch of cows up and won't let them get away. And if one breaks, four or five of them dogs will go to that cow and just make her miserable till she gets back in the bunch. And that's the way you train cattle, too, with dogs. Tell you a story about, was last year or year before they had the bad drought in Texas. Well, a friend of mine who's the president-elect of the Cattlemen's Association, Bo Hobby, lives close to me there, and his main man, Frank Beatty, knew that I had some dogs. In fact, I've given Frank some dogs, and they got some of those Texas cattle during that drought because they were just starving to death out there. I think they got, I don't know, four or five semi-loads from Texas and brought them back to Archer over there, and they were wild as a bunch of deer. I mean, you couldn't even ride around them or a horse through them or anything. They just scatter, tear fences down, whatever. So Frank called me and my partner, Billy Ray Hunter, and we took a little pack of dogs over there, probably six or eight, I don't remember now. And when we left there, those cattle were standing in the middle of that, you know, 200-acre pasture with their heads down like that, looking at dogs going by. And we called the dogs off and got them in the trailer and stood around and talked like cow people do often when they get through working. And I guarantee you it was an hour we stood around talking and playing with dogs and loading up horses and stuff. And those cattle never moved from that circle. And Frank said he went out there the next day with one dog, sent that dog in there, and they bunched right back up just like that again. And you can dog break a bunch of cows in short order with some good dogs. I mean, you can't do it with just any dog. But they are different than, like your sheep dog or whatever, border collies and that sort of thing. They drive cattle or sheep or geese or whatever you train them to do. These dogs are made to hold them. Now, they'll go in a bad place, a swamp or something, where you can't go with a horse. A cow will go places a horse won't go, especially with a man on his back. They're lighter, of course, and whatever, and they can go in boggy places where a horse can't go. But you can send a little bunch of dogs in there, and those cows got to go somewhere. And they'll usually come to the open and get in a bunch because they have a herding instinct, of course, so they want to bunch up and protect each other and protect their calves, and that's the way they do in the wild. You know, if you got a coyote problem or a wolf problem or panther problem or whatever, those cattle will get in a bunch and get those calves in the middle of them, and they won't let those coyotes or wolves or whatever get in there. And that's just the way that they, you know, they look at that dog and they see wolf. They don't see dog. So it's just a natural instinct for both of them. The cows herd up and these dogs bay them up.
We brought up an interesting point talking about getting the cattle dog broke, because when I think about cow dogs, I think about training the dogs, not the cattle. So could you comment on, you know, getting the cattle used to being working with dogs? I don't think people realize that it's a two-way learning experience.
Yes, that's key, I guess, to being successful at that type of thing. Is usually people start calves when they're weaned or whatever, and still young, and they'll put them in a small area and a strong fence where they can't escape, and put some dogs in there on them, and just bay and let those dogs bay them up until they just stand there and get used to the dogs. Dogs, of course, quit once the cow's standing still, and their dog broke after that. Basically, you don't have to do it again. Usually, you can go out. That cow may stay out for a year before you put her back in a pen, but you go in there with a bunch of dogs and they'll bunch up usually. Just sometimes they'll you just drive in a pasture with a trailer and a couple of dogs on there bark a few times, those cows are getting a bunch because they don't want to get that ear bit. They don't like it. I don't know why, but yeah, that's important. Training the dog is of course important too. They don't all have it. Some of them just like this dog right here started when she was a pup. I mean, she just went right to it, just loved it, you know. And her litter mate, my partner had, we got them at the same time. Guy gave us two dogs same time, a good friend of mine. And that dog wouldn't leave the trailer. He'd ride off. She wouldn't even go with the horses, much less work cows. And so she's a yard dog somewhere. We didn't keep her, but I don't have the heart to shoot one like some people do. So some people just, you know, if the dog don't work, they leave them in the woods or whatever. But I, you know, I always find a home for them. But in the pups, usually training them is just a matter of taking them with a dog that'll work. Usually, it's like Billy said yesterday. If he was to go out to a nightclub or something with Bob, he'd follow Bob around and learn what to do. You know.
Yeah, right.
But they do. The pups usually, most of them have it instinct, and they just go to it. And I got two puppies out of her right now. They're just started, about half grown, and went with her and a couple other old dogs I have, and just took right to it, just like they've been doing it for 20 years. No problem.
While the band's setting up, we've got a couple more minutes here. You're not off the hook yet. Actually, Jack's pretty good. I have found that the scariest thing in the world to a cowboy is not a rattlesnake, but a microphone. We have a question.
We like to have about 10 dogs per cow. Nah, I'm just kidding. If they're well dog broke, you can take one dog out there and pin a bunch of cows, one good dog. And I've seen Paul Roberts do it. He had one of the best dogs I ever saw. And we'd ride around in a Jeep and come to a little bunch of cows, 50 or 60, 70 cows sometimes. And he'd send that dog, one dog in there. He'd just whistle a couple times and she'd sail off of that Jeep and go out there and bay those cows up for 30 minutes if you left her out there. Same thing to call her back. Two whistles, she'd be back in that Jeep. Those cows would stand there and look at you. And I'm talking about they had 1,000 acres to get away in, but that dog knew what to do and those cows were well trained, well dog broke. But normally, if you're going out to gather cattle, you know, most people that are with you have a dog or two. So you wind up with a couple of dogs per man usually. My friend Billy Ray's famous. He'll take a trailer load if you let him. But he's we talked about something else yesterday I thought was interesting. Most people don't use a cow dog to catch hogs and stuff like that with, because some of them will start catching calves once they find out that catching's kind of fun. And that calf's about the same size as the hogs are catching. But my dogs will, they actually know the difference. If I go out there on foot, they know I'm hog hunting, and they will catch a hog. And you can go right through, and I've hog hunted and cow hunted in the same pasture, and you, if I'm walking, they'll walk right through those cows, and cows don't pay attention to them, and they don't pay attention to the cows. They'll go right to, and I'll put them on some hog sign, and they'll find a hog and catch it. But if I'm on a horse, they don't pay attention to a hog. I mean, they may, if one runs right in front of them, they'll run a little ways until I whistle them off or whatever. But usually they don't even pay attention to a hog or smell. If they, I know they smell them because you cross hog sign all the time. But they know what they're doing. They know what they're supposed to be doing. Yeah, you're smart. That's right.
Jack, can you tell us where you get your dogs and how you can't just inbreed them forever? What do you do about that?
Most of the dogs I've got have been some we had in the family over the years, or we traded with other people that we knew. I had a little line of dogs called, well, they were right here from Columbia County. We called them Screwtail Curs, and they were, a lot of them were brindle color, and they were a little heavier than this dog, kind of more like a bulldog, but they were cur dogs. They weren't bulldogs, and they had a short tail, most of them, about a half a tail, and the end of their tail, they had a little little hook in there. I don't know what that was from, maybe inbreed or something, who knows, but they were some of the best dogs I ever had, too, and they were, like I say, traded. I got another Jip at home that I got from Paul Roberts out of that same dog, and I've got, like, some five-generation pictures of those dogs now. It's interesting. They still look just alike, and they act just alike. So genetics plays a big part in it, too. This dog be completely different temperament and personality than that dog, and her puppies will be the same as her, and that pup, the other dog's puppies will be the same as her mama. So it's interesting, that part of it, too. But I've got... I got this dog from James Duncan, and I got another dog. Well, actually, gave the dog to Frank, but he came from the Carlton place down.
Jack, we sure appreciate it. And Jack has a cracker cow and horse over here, and the dogs. Please come visit him, and he'll be glad to talk to you. Loves to talk about it. Thanks a million, Jack. What's her name?
This is Hammer.
Hammer. How old is she? That's about as old as they get, isn't it, for a cow dog?
Don't let